Oh, hi, Rocketeers. I'm your host, Karen Tongson, filling in for Guy Branum, who's still on his Goddess tour. And welcome to Pop Rocket, a weekly show picking over all the pop culture we love to love. With me to talk TV, film, music, and anything else entertaining, our journalist and novelist, Margaret Wappler.
Why, hello there, Karen.
Hi, Magwops. It was so nice to see you out in the wild this weekend.
I know. It was a big Pop Rocket weekend. One of our very own, Winter Mitchell, got married.
Hello, hello, Winter.
Yes, and looked gorgeous.
Mrs. Rohrbaugh.
To Alan Rohrbaugh, lucky man. It was a beautiful wedding, just really pretty and picturesque in Ojai, and we all had a great time.
We had a great time. It was so nice to not be in the studio and to be a little gussied up. And,
yeah,
you know, to have some cocktails and goblets and the whole thing.
Yes. There was dresses, and I powdered my cleavage so I wouldn't get too sweaty.
Wow, cleavage powder. I should have thought about that for me.
I recommend it in the heat.
Okay. Well, I'll have to get your powder, Rex, after we record this show. So we actually have two very special guests in the studio today. We have writer, comedian, and a Real People's Choice Award winner,
Hey.
The host of Unhappy Hour podcast, social media darling, Matt Bellassai. Welcome.
Thank you. My cleavage is powdered, as it is every day.
Oh, good. You got my memo then.
Yes.
You must use Shiseido or something. And we also have, as a bonus guest, the producer of Unhappy Hour, Barry Finkel.
Hi.
Hey, it's great to hear you.
Oh my God, thank you.
On
yeah.
the show, Barry.
My voice is on Unhappy Hour, but this is the first podcast I've ever been on that I'm not producing.
Oh, nice.
So it's very special to be here.
So you get to just enjoy yourself and sit and chat.
Yeah, I mean, my heart's still racing and all that, but it's so chill.
It's because of everyone's powdered décolletage.
Right, yes. I'm actually extremely allergic.
The fumes of it are getting a little thick.
Well, so is there anything we should know? I mean, our listeners should know about the Unhappy Hour. I know that you guys, I think, drink and talk shit a lot, but what else happens?
Usually I'm the one talking shit, and Barry is there to balance me out a little bit, so I'm not just sitting there talking shit by myself, which is typically what I'm doing on an average day. But yeah, we're here in LA taping a few exciting interviews that'll be on our show coming up soon.
So there you have it. Barry, what have you found most fascinating about being in LA so far?
Ugh, I've been here many times and I love it a lot. I think this time there are these like flying insects that are really interesting. Matt experienced that as well.
Literally waiting for the Uber to pick us up on the way here. There was a very large hissing beetle that flew at me. And in my attempt to run away, I completely ate shit in the Whole Foods parking lot. And like, you saw me out there. I was like, I've been dusting myself off. Like, my backpack is ruined.
Oh.
I fell on my glasses case and it's smashed.
It's very Day of the Locust out here.
Yeah.
Lately, so.
I'm used to the rats, not used to the flying insects. Yeah. So that's been fascinating for sure.
Well, I'm glad we don't have flying rats.
Yeah,
it's a matter of time.
It's only a matter of time, people. Just you wait. So coming up on this week's show, we're actually going to be talking about purely joyful pop culture, the things that give us pleasure and joy amidst all of our woes and troubles, which is somewhat ironic given that Matt and Barry's show is pretty famous for complaining. So I can't wait to hear you like inhabit your happy places. I'm assuming you might have separate ones. So, but we'll also, as you know, be sharing our latest jams. But first, let's find out what arts and entertainment news or events have caught our attention this week. Margaret Wappler.
Well, first of all, I just want to say really quickly that I listened to one of your recent episodes and I laughed so hard when you guys got to the metrosexual bit because my husband Dave and I talk about that weird moment in time like oddly a lot. Like we're always like, how did that happen and why did it happen? It was like a New York style section like myth.
Like the height of David Beckham.
Yeah, or like a stepping stone to help the straight man not moisturize.
It was like far enough into history where like men were like, oh, women actually get to do a lot of things for themselves that are comforting,
yeah.
like moisturizing.
Right, and, like, getting and, massages and
right.
stuff.
But not so far as to, like, just accept that you can do that without, like, labeling it something separate.
Right. It was like, oh, I can take care of myself but still be straight.
So you just had to have an extra label just to reinforce.
Right, right. Just to keep that fragile masculinity.
You know, in the pre-metrosexual era, another butch lesbian gave me shit about, like, getting a pedicure. Like, can't believe you get pedicures. And I was just like, oh, honey, back.
I was kidding. No lesbian in LA, especially at this point in time, would even bat an eye.
You should be double mani-pedi-ing this stuff. You know what I mean? Anyway. But Margaret.
I digress. What I really want to talk about is the amazing Vulture interview by David Marchese with Kathleen Turner. I'm still not quite sure why Kathleen Turner was interviewed in this particular moment of time. Like, it just seems sort of like she was there and he was there and they were suddenly in the Vulture lobby talking. I don't know. But she is a queen. I had no idea. I mean, I've always thought she's a brilliant actress. And if you went to movies at all in the 80s, of course you knew who she was. And she has this great raspy, smoky voice and, you know, all these movies.
She, like, romanced the Stone.
Yeah, and Body Heat. Like, all these great movies she was in. And she, and when I think about her, I'm like, oh, that's actually a type of actress that we just don't see that much anymore. She has this kind of real, like, Katharine Hepburn-like masculinity and some real gravitas. And I missed her without realizing that I missed her. And for one thing, I'm pro women announcing their anger in culture. I feel like that doesn't happen enough. And especially older women, I feel like, can't say that. But she's taken some hard knocks. And so at one point in the interview, the interviewer asked her, what else aside from luck has driven your career? And she says, rage. What do you mean? I'm fucking angry, man. About what? Everything. Where does that anger come from? Injustice in the world. And I was already just, like, standing up and clapping and being like, go, queen, keep going. And she, I mean, it's so dishy, this interview, in a way that celeb interviews never are anymore. She talks shit about Burt Reynolds, which is, like, satisfying, but it just keeps getting better. She talks about what a weirdo William Hurt is, was, whatever. She talks about this, like, competition that Michael Douglas, Jack Nicholson, and Warren Beatty had for sleeping with her, who would get to her first.
Who won?
None of them.
Oh, well,
I know,
go.
Which is also just like, mm-hmm.
I heard the Friends cast was also mean to her, or
yeah.
something that she
well,
discusses
are
that
they
in
nice
the interview.
To people? She talks about being a guest star on Friends and how they were just very cliquish and didn't really, like, give her the time of day. And, you know, she kind of begrudgingly, you know, respects them as an ensemble and says, you know, they had good chemistry or whatever, but, like, acting chops, no comment. And then but I think the best comment of all is she dishes on an unnamed Hollywood actress, an A-lister, and she says that this person has no range, they've been playing the same role for 20 years, and she would never be that kind of person. And it set off this mad bout of speculation on the internet. Everyone's like, is it Sandra Bullock? Is it Reese Witherspoon? Is it Julia Roberts? Is it Michelle Pfeiffer? Like, the Vox went through, like, basically bracketing, like, who it could possibly be.
Oh, God.
And eventually settled on most likely it's Jennifer Aniston. Who hasn't really had a great film career, to be honest, but she still has managed to kind of keep herself in the A-list. Debatable. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it's such a delightful piece. Everyone should go and read it and just behold her amazingness.
Yeah. I mean, inspiration from another generation.
Yeah. Yeah, and just to add, too, that she talks about, I mean, she kind of disappeared for a time in this sort of cloud of alcoholism and rheumatoid arthritis, and nobody really knew what
That's
happened.
That's my future.
Right? It's my present. but nobody really knows what happened, and the press was just really unkind to her, and she does get a chance to kind of set the record straight on that, too. Basically, like, this is what Hollywood does, or at least did, to women who, you know, were suffering. Just kind of showed them no mercy. Kicked her when she was down. So it was kind of nice for her to just be able to say, like, you guys are dicks about it, and I'm back. And I'm back in the theater
She's
world.
She's back. So, Barry, we're going to let you talk first this time.
Oh God, thank
because,
you so
you know,
much.
I'm
going
to
rub it in Matt's
face.
Late.
Exactly.
Yeah, thank you.
I just
want
to jump in and
Just cut her off like every sentence or so.
I'm used to it. I got this.
So what are you all about this week?
I am all about, embarrassingly, but also I own it, the Sprouse twins. It was their birthday on August 4th, related to what you were talking about, because until early this year, I thought that they were like David Schwimmer's sons, because they played, I didn't really watch Friends, and they played Ross's kid.
Yeah.
I misunderstood that to mean that they were his children in real life. They're not, but to date myself, watched Sweet Life of Zach and Cody and Sweet Life on Deck a little too late. They were both on Disney, but they were in that. And then they've just had this crazy career renaissance that's coming up, because Cole is in Riverdale, which is a show I love to hate watch, but really just love to watch. And then Dylan has a mead bar in Williamsburg that's opening up. He has a mead bar.
He just cultivated his mead palate in the intervening years.
Like, he's celebrity hipster.
Yeah, he's been brewing it. He also does claim that it's like partially based in his heathen religion, which I did not know was still a thing. So I'm all about them. Oh, yeah. They're very fun to pay attention to.
Isn't Cole in some sort of like hot romance?
Riverdale.
From Riverdale. He's dating one of the actresses.
He's dating Betty. He's dating Betty.
He's dating,
in real life.
Dating Betty
Lily Reinhardt.
Yeah, I have to say, like, I know nothing about these people because I'm so old.
I know.
So
I was going
to
be like, you guys know this isn't who we know.
people
should know that this is happening.
See, like, I need to bring you to my bar trivia teams, because most of us are so Gen X-y that when we get Nick at Night stuff or Disney Channel or celebs from the 90s and the aughts, we are completely clueless.
If
like, please give us
educate us.
If you can phone a friend, I got you.
Yeah. Well, so everybody visit Dylan's Mead Bar in Williamsburg.
It's not open yet, but I will definitely keep everyone updated about when it does open.
Please do, because I probably really will go there.
Yes. It seems insane.
If only to see if he has different facial hair from Cole.
Oh, they both don't have facial hair. I can tell you all about it. He has long hair. Doesn't.
That's his Williamsburg touch.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's how he's keeping it real.
The Williamsburg pony, the man bun maybe occasionally.
Right, the Willy pony.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, so Matt, now you finally get to talk.
Finally.
I'm so sorry.
We've been oppressing you. This room full of women has just been oppressing you.
I'm so sorry, man.
To
know.
I was going to also add on to, I feel like every time I'm in LA, I'm constantly, I'd like to think I keep my chill around famous people, but today I was at a mall and Lisa Kudrow walked past me.
Oh, that's a big one.
And I felt like Catherine Turner probably did. I was like, oh, she doesn't want me in her clique. I was like, Lisa Kudrow was like, please get away from me, sir. Stop asking me for my autograph, sir.
I feel like that's kind of the scuttlebutt on her.
None of this happened.
She's not that friendly.
I have no idea. She seems like a lovely person, and I did not attempt to talk to her.
What was she buying? Can you tell
I have
us
no that? Idea. We were in the perfume area. Oh. I was, to be clear, I was in Bloomingdale's, but only because I was walking from the restaurant to the parking garage, and that was the avenue that I chose. Anyway, my thing of the week, I guess, was I saw with Barry Beyonce and Jay-Z last week.
Oh.
And I should say, I saw Beyonce and Jay-Z happened to be there. And
well, aren't you a Beyonceologist?
I am, yes. Mm. One of the proudest achievements was that I was once on this list of the most 10 influential Beyonce fans on Twitter.
Oh, wow. That's huge.
Their metric was
you've arrived, end it.
You had to have Beyonce in your Twitter bio, just the word Beyonce, and then it just went by number of followers. So I just it's a bad system for measuring influence
purely
in the Beyonce community. But I made it, and I will hold that title. It was truly a spectacular show. Although,
where did you see the show?
Where?
Yeah, what venue?
We saw it at MetLife Stadium in New Jersey, because they don't perform in New York, because the giant stadium is in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, you have to go to New Jersey.
So far.
But they made all 50,000 people evacuate the stadium before she went on because there was a tornado warning. They let DJ Khaled go for like 45 minutes. So he was the opener.
Let him get sucked away.
Exactly. We don't care if he gets wiped out. Ultimately.
And he like waved his baby around. It was very weird. He like doesn't. I don't know. I don't quite get like the DJ like track for like, you know, career track. I don't understand. It really.
Yeah.
He just kind of like waved his baby around on stage.
Baby was on stage?
Yeah. His baby is like an integral part.
Yeah, I'm getting concerned.
Yeah.
That was very strange. And then like while they were preparing the stage for Beyonce and Jay-Z, this police officer came out. They turned all the stadium lights on and they made an announcement. They were like, everybody has to leave the stadium. Or get under the stairs, like under the bleachers.
So real safe.
All had to cram. Yeah. And it was like a true equalizer. Like we were jammed in with like Lin-Manuel Miranda and like all of these, and just everybody. And for like an hour.
Yeah.
And eventually they went on, but they didn't go on until like 11:30 at night.
Yep.
And it was,
Whoa.
But wow. It was a spectacular show.
Incredible.
It's everything. You know, I have some people in my life that I'm considering getting rid of who question Beyonce and her influence in the world because of how choreographed and like deliberate everything is, and it's not genuine or whatever nonsense they believe. And I like, you can't watch that show and think that just anybody could do that.
Right.
No.
Yeah.
No.
What was your favorite part of the show other than the tornado?
What was my favorite part? The entire thing. It was also my first time seeing Beyonce. We had incredible tickets because Matt is an absolute angel. And the entire thing. I mean, there was like a modern dance act at one point. Like, just incredible. But just Beyonce. I mean, just the way she can command an audience and the stage and everything, it was just incredible.
I like it when she lets in just a little bit of Bjork, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Just a little bit of modern day. Yeah, just some conceptualism there.
Yeah.
Tossing in some feminist quotes, that kind of thing.
It's so funny because I just heard one of my friends who went to the same show reported that they're like, well, Jay-Z was amazing, but I don't know. Beyonce didn't seem like she was feeling it tonight. I was like,
really?
What?
Okay, first of all, you would have never been able to tell that because she's incredible. But second of all, it was late at night.
Yeah. It was the same exact one. Yeah.
They performed until 1:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't have to do that necessarily. Yeah.
What I loved especially was I'd seen Beyonce a couple times before in smaller venues. Not like, you know.
Saw Beyonce perform.
Before she was Beyonce. Yeah. No, just like, you know, like I saw her at the United Center in Chicago, which is, relatively speaking, smaller than MetLife Stadium.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it was interesting to see how, like, the costumes and the performance were all, like, upped for, like, so that the people in the back, like all of her costumes were so
huge,
giant, and like there's just like, of course they're all super detailed, but like if you're all the way up in the risers, you can fucking see Beyonce
like
from
sweat.
Wherever. Yeah, just like all of the glitter and just the way that they
amazing.
Like at one point she puts on the like Crazy in Love costume, which is like
killed me.
The short like short jean shorts, white tee.
The classic.
The stiletto red heel, but it was all like glitterified and it was
literally
so
have
good.
Goosebumps. It was so good.
Even with Matt just describing it.
It was spectacular.
Well, my All About This Week is equally spectacular, even if it comes from the world of the mundane. And that is, of course, the start of this season's Chopped Grillmasters competition.
Hey.
And Rocketeers, you know that I love Chopped, but I actually have never, I think, presented it to you as an All About before. I've just referred to it as a very important touchstone in our contemporary culture. But I love the Grillmasters competition because, you know, you got to grill everything pretty much. I mean, you can still use the fryers and stuff like that, but they converted the Chopped kitchens into these, but where the stoves usually are, they have these kind of domed gas grills and other grilling implements. And this competition is actually divided by region. So we get Kansas City, Texas, North Carolina, And then I can't remember the fourth one. Sorry, barbecue people. I'm sure it's something that's really obvious. But this week it was the Kansas City Grillmaster Showdown with Caitlin McGee. There's some drama there because, you know, her father is a well-known pet master in Kansas City, and she's trying to follow in his footsteps and honor his legacy. We have Jeremy Williams, Craig Carter, and an older woman named Stephanie Wilson who, you know, took barbecuing up because her brother was really into it, and then he passed away, and so she carried the mantle for the family. Anyway, there was a special guest judge with a KC barbecue legend, Mo Kazin. And, you know, as Kansas City grill masters, they had to come in with their signature Kansas City barbecue traits, like the dry rubs, the kind of heat and sweet elements. Burnt ends was one of the ingredients in the mysterious in the mystery basket for the first round. So burnt ends, for those of you who don't know, is that like kind of the crisped part of like the brisket, like the kind of the end of the brisket that gets cut off. And before, they used to discard those ends until
fools
because it's the tastiest, like fattiest, like crispiest part. And then some enterprising Kansas City barbecuer brought them, started to sell them, said instead of throwing these out, I mean, all the customers keep asking for them, we might as well charge for them. Anyway, so much you learn about Kansas City, its barbecue legacy. I'm not going to spoil who ends up in the final two in the dessert round, because so much of the drama that I described for you like plays itself out there. Anyway, you know, please watch Chopped. I know everyone already does, but pay close attention to this like set of techniques, especially if you're getting tired of people just like having to make stuff with, I don't know, like gummy bears and truffles.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, that's it's something that brings me joy. And since we're going to be talking about joy today, that is my all about. So you've been listening to Pop Rocket. We'll be right back to talk about that aforementioned joyful popular culture right after this.
So you want to understand what's going on in the world.
But trying to keep up with the news can be such a headache.
With clickbait headlines, TV news acting like there's always two equal sides to every story.
And never enough talk about the various McDonald Playland characters.
Okay, in my defense though, when I brought that up, we learned a lot.
That's true.
I'm Brent Black.
I'm Courtney Unlow.
And I'm Travis McElroy.
With Trends Like These.
Real life friends talking internet trends.
We debunk misleading headlines from the top trending news.
We always throw in at least one positive story.
But we call out bullshit when we see it.
Join us each week on MaximumFun.org.
Because with trends like these,
who needs any memes?
Ah?
Yeah, that was great.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Karen Tongson. With me in the studio are
Margaret Wappler,
Barry Finkel,
Matt Belisai.
So I know that the world is a dumpster fire. In fact, California is literally on fire, as it so frequently is, and it's increasingly so in the intervening years that climate change has just made this day of the locusts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as Kathleen Turner, the great Kathleen Turner herself said, you know, we're fucking angry, man. And there's that anger comes from so much injustice in the world. And it's really hard to kind of stay keyed into social media with, or like any kind of media and popular culture without feeling provoked or triggered. And so today we thought that we would try to like inhabit a happy place, the things that bring us deep and profound joy, the places we escape to when we just can't take it anymore and have to like turn our Twitter off or like, you know, like demand that they turn CNN or Fox or MSNBC off at the gym while you're working out. And so we're going to, you know, invite you to sit back with us, put on your fuzzy slippers, get cozy and get into the things that bring us joy. So I know that Matt and Barry, your show is called Unhappy Hour.
It's basically the opposite.
Which is essentially the opposite. And I'm, you know, wondering, though, like, in that space of snark, the things that you some often kind of talk about with some incredulity and ridicule, I can tell or detect that there's some things that give you tremendous joy that you cover, like, including Beyoncé or what have you. How would each of you define the platonic ideal of joyfulness or a joyful popular culture? What does it have to be for you?
It's funny. I mean, the show is called Unhappy Hour, but it's actually a pretty positive show. Maybe.
We get to the positivity.
Right. I like to think that unhappiness is like you're venting out the bad stuff so you can arrive at the good stuff.
We end every episode with chasers, which is basically our like all about, but the thing that makes us happy at the end of the day. So.
Yeah. Do you want like a specific example?
Yeah, a specific example.
Sure.
Of what's joyful, or like, you know, and what makes that like a place
of
joy for you?
This it reminded me because I just dropped my phone and my iPhone background is Anthony from Queer Eye, and Queer Eye to me is like the ideal like joyful show. Even though I'll sob at the end of every episode. Have you seen the new Queer Eye?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
I haven't yet.
Seen both.
I haven't yet either.
I never can like start a season without finishing it in the same sitting. So
it's a lot to watch at once because it is very emotional. But and it maybe is ironic that my choice is something that does make me cry every time I watch it. But I watched the entire second season on an airplane recently, and like the flight attendant had to keep checking on me because I was just like sobbing in my seat. It's just, you know, they do a really great job of. It's all about kind of taking a person who is in need of some help and like improving their life, teaching them how to improve their own life. It's like relentlessly positive. And I think it's just like, I'm also like sitting there with a notebook and like, like how can I use all these tips? Or what am I going to talk to my
therapist
about? I noticed
you're not French tucking, though.
So. The French tuck, I disagree with. Tan is doing too much to promote the French tuck, and not everybody can pull it off, and he's forcing it on everybody. But you know what? They do a great job of convincing everybody with that they give a French tuck to, that they can pull off a French tuck, and it's all about confidence. So,
do you have a favorite episode?
The best one, I think, in the first season is, I'm going to forget his name, but he's a gay guy that they make over. And at the end of it, he like comes out to his aunt, I think, who he had not been out to. And it gets very emotional. And,
oh, yeah. That's a very sweet episode.
That one truly destroyed me.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned Queer Eye as a happy place because just on Twitter today, Stone Cold Jane Austen at Fleur de Liqueur tweeted this, quote, Netflix should add the category, sorry there are no more episodes of Bake Off and Queer Eye. You're clearly going through some stuff. Here are some other soothing shows with people being nice to each other over low stakes things. Obviously, yes. In response to the announcement of this rando like category of best popular film by the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. But also, I think that there's something to be said there about these shows that are about people helping each other out. Because when I was trying to think about like the places that I retreat when I'm especially sad or that give me some hope or uplift is precisely in shows like, you know, remember Ty Pennington's Extreme Makeover.
We have discussed it.
I mean, where it's like you're doing something nice for people, you're using your skills, your abilities to like, you know, craft something that improves people's lives in whatever way, be it material or emotional. And there's a new show out right now also called Making It, which is essentially kind of a show hosted by Amy Poehler and Nick Offerman. And it's a craft competition show. But it took its inspiration from Bake Off, or the Great British Baking Show as we know it here in the United States, which everybody is like so tuned into and completely delighted by because it's competition, but there's genuine sweetness between the competitors and people pulling for each other and that kind of thing. I mean, Barry, like beyond reality competition, though, like it's what are some of the other places that you look for this kind of joy or this kind of like human interaction that is inspirational?
Yeah. And for me, actually, I'm not a huge reality TV person. Mm-hmm. I'm not a huge reality competition TV mm-hmm. person. For me, I really find joy watching something where I know that the team behind it just like worked so hard to put it there, and like and that it's sweet and wonderful and fun and good, which like the first question that you were asking about, what is joyful pop culture? I really do think it's just about however you feel. Like there are a bunch of examples for me, and none of them are quite alike, but the way they make me feel is the same. And so for me, there's Miss Fisher's Murder Mysteries. It's an Australian show. And that one, it's very campy. I often find that my joy comes from campiness.
Oh, great.
But it's campy murder mysteries, but not gruesome. Like, you know that. And she's just this, like, strong lead in the 1920s. And it's like the costumes are beautiful. And a show like that, a show like Downton Abbey, which Matt and I have been talking about a lot this week.
Mm-hmm. We're all Downton Abbey people in here.
Yeah.
Yes. Miss Fisher's Murder Mystery is an example of that kind of joy. That's a lot from camp. But the show that is new, that I've been obsessed with, and I've talked about it on Unhappy Hour, it's called Joe Pera Talks With You.
I've heard about this.
So it's Joe Pera is a comedian, and he has this show where it's 11 minutes long, each episode. It's on Adult Swim, and it's just this character he does that's set in the Upper Peninsula, Michigan, and each episode is just like a thing that he loves that he's going to talk to you about. And it's not just to you, it's with you. And it's just like, it's so earnest and genuine and sweet. I've never seen anything like it. Like, it just makes you feel warm. It's not cynical at all. It's just pure joy.
Do you have a favorite episode?
Yes. So there's one that's called The Fall Drive.
I'm glad you could join me on my fall loop, the drive I do each year on the Saturday following Halloween. It's a tradition that began when I was trying to answer the question, how come jack-o'-lanterns scare me so goddamn much?
Well, that's lovely. Margaret Wappler.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it seems like there are a lot of things that provide joy.
Absolutely. I mean, I was, as you guys were going around answering the question about just sort of the platonic ideal of it, I was thinking part of it is like you don't feel gross after you see it.
Yeah.
You know, there are certain shows that you watch and it's really indulgent and kind of naughty. And then after you turn it off, you're kind of like, ugh, like, yeah. Why did I waste my time with that? You know, I think for me, like a show recently that I kind of ditched because I mean, part of this is just like having a baby and having a lot less time. But like I was a devout Love and Hip Hop watcher, and it just has started to wear on my soul in a way that it just wasn't before, mainly because there's just so much tearing each other down, and it's just so fake. And of course I know it's fake, and it's supposed to be fake in so many different ways, like that we're not supposed to really take it all that seriously, but I still would get done with an episode or two, and I would usually watch them in like a 3-hour slack jawed like catatonic fit, you know, and like I would get done and be like, what did I just do? And so I just haven't watched it in a really long time, or you know, in like in a year or so, and so I was just trying to think, like, what are the shows that like I watch it and I feel good while I'm watching it, and then I feel good afterwards. I feel like it was time well spent. I mean, I still am like a Project Runway fan. Like, I always will be a stand for that show. Like, mm-hmm. Tim Gunn as the anchor of that show is just such a warm presence. It gives me like good warm feelings of like art school mentors, you know, that like actually do want their students to succeed. And I love just watching creative people like work themselves through problems. And that's just the kind of show where like they don't edit it to make too much sniping. Like, there's some degree of sniping, but it's like, it's okay. You know, everybody kind of hugs at the end. That's a show I love. Lately, I've been really clicking with Lady Dynamite.
Yes.
It took me like a while.
That's my other one that I did.
Yeah, like, I mean, I've always been a Maria Bamford fan, but the first time I tried to watch that show, it was so kooky and off the wall that I was just like, what the fuck? I didn't know what to make of it. And I just couldn't like lock into the rhythm of the show. And then recently I've just started watching it. Like, it's kind of the last thing I'll watch before I go to bed so that I'm like happy and laughing. And then I go to bed, you know? But the second season is just really strong. And I think it's comforting for me because half the time the show opens with a scene of Cafe Leche, which is like literally in my neighborhood. So it's like, oh, my cafe. One of the episodes I've really enjoyed lately is when her boyfriend, Scott, who's played by, and I'm going to butcher this name, Olafur Dúri Ólafsson, He decides that he's going to try out stand-up comedy. And he goes out to a laundromat where there's a supportive open mic that she tells him about, and he kills it just by, like, standing there and kind of doing nothing. But because he's a dude, he just kills it, and all these dudes in the crowd are like, yeah, you can be part of our comedy troupe. You can be part of our little clique. And he gets this group of guys to run around with, and instantly he starts, like, mansplaining to Maria the best ways to do stand-up, tells her that he knows somebody who can, like, do a critique of her act, like, just totally, like, undermines her.
I totally killed it at the car wash last night.
That's awesome!
I did 6 minutes and just said one word, and they loved it.
Wow, that's oddly enraging.
I tried to blow it like 4 minutes in. They just kept laughing.
Maybe I should try not saying anything in my act.
Not to be an asshole, but you kind of be stealing my bit. And Mikey J says that's the worst offense for any comic.
I think rape is the worst offense a comic has committed.
Dangerous territory!
And it's just, it's utterly delightful.
So the kooky brings you joy. I mean, I think it's really hard to kind of sort through, like, all of the different genres that make it possible to find, like, that kind of joyful place. Because with prestige and fauxtige television, so much of it, you know, is contingent upon the complexity of these characters who are not all good or all bad.
Right.
And who are often, like, you know, mostly not very nice, right? And kind of annoying at best, right? And purely and evil, like actually dastardly in other occasions. So, like, you know, it's not like I can watch Unreal or Mad Men or any of these other shows and feel like, oh, that was just, oh, that really hit the sweet spot for me. That was awesome. Right. Even though they're amazing.
You get a different kind of joy from those type of shows.
So there's, like, amazing things to watch. I think this is why, like, you know, I tend to be a kind of rewatcher of things that when I'm looking for joy, if I'm looking to lift my spirits, I go back to things that are already proven to have done that in the past. So even though Chris Pratt is totally canceled, Parks and Rec is one of those places for me.
Definitely.
You know, because you have, you know, Leslie Knope in her own obtuseness and earnestness, you have this kind of, like, wonderful portrait of, like, persistence and someone who really cares about stuff. And the same with all of the other characters on that show, even if they're kind of goofy. The romance between her and Ben is really sweet and nerdy. It's like kind of this ideal, like, nothing too torturous, but, like, sort of light and frothy. And you know, I can actually, it's so joyous that I can actually turn it on and fall asleep to my favorite lines from it. So I think that's one of the measures, too, around something that you can watch and relax and maybe even fall asleep to because you're so comfortable with it.
Yes, like, you know, it'll put you in a relaxed, happy space for going to bed. Yeah. Like, the worst thing you can do before going to bed, and I've done it, is, like, open up Twitter.
Well,
and have a good run through your timeline.
Well, like, which is why, you know, it's important also to have, like, certain places of refuge in social media or on online platforms, because if that's the last thing that you're looking at before you go to bed, I know that for me, one of my happy places is going to Adventure Cats at AdventureCats.org.
I'm glad it's an org.
It's Instagram. It's an Instagram account of adventure cats who travel around the world, who've learned how to use to walk on leashes.
What?
Some of them surf or on kayaks. And it's just like these glorious, beautiful, like basically beautiful travel photography with cats on leashes. And I think it's amazing.
I'm down.
So I think that that's a place where I'm like, oh. And, you know, one of the other things too, if you're on Twitter or if you're on Facebook or some other platform, just find one of these the dodo interspecies love memes or videos. Those things, I'm just like, I can watch like animals hugging, like a pig and like a giraffe hugging each other all day. You know, I mean, that's kind of like, we're just like, oh, see everything. People can work across their differences. They can do it in the animal kingdom.
I mean, like, kind of gets us every time.
So, I mean, like, do all of you have any like places of refuge on the actual internet itself? Like, probably the most scary place, the thing that stresses people out most?
I've drawn a pretty stark line between Twitter and Instagram.
Yes.
And I made some joke on Twitter about how Twitter is like where I go to learn that children are in like prisons, and Instagram is where I go to see like hot guys doing ads for Whole Foods, like quinoa, which to me, like, that's my happy place. It's like just a bunch of shirtless dudes like being idiots, where I'm like, I don't have to use any part of my brain except like the caveman part to enjoy this.
No wonder Anthony is like your screensaver on your
phone. Yeah, I didn't want to say it, but Anthony was the person I named in that tweet, because every post he does is sponsored by like a Whole Foods or some weird salad bar, and I just it's ridiculous, but I love it so much. It's just like such separate worlds that like terribleness is being documented on Twitter, and then like just it's as if nothing is happening on Instagram. It's just like pure. It
always feels like fluff in a great way.
Yeah, people jumping in front of like the beach, that kind of thing. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
I mean, just like a few weeks ago, I actually took Twitter and Facebook off my phone as kind of an experiment, because like I would just look at it too much, like right before bed and then right when getting up, and it's like, oh, within 3 seconds I'm depressed. Like, no, thank you. But I still have Instagram, because it really is like before bed or when waking up, it's like, what's the harm of seeing my friend eating a piece of cake and like some dress, you know, from a fashion label I can't afford.
Or you would see me brushing my cat with this glove.
Exactly. I'll watch a Tongsonator story. This is good.
To take it one step further with the Instagram thing, so I have a dog who I could also talk about for a long time, but it won't. Matt is shaking his head. He doesn't like him. It's rude. But,
see, that's the thing. Sometimes you see someone's dog and it's like, I hate this dog in particular.
You're bringing the joy
back. Let's bring it back up.
I'm sorry.
This is not unhappy hour. This is happy hour on Pop Rocket.
All dogs are invited.
Yeah. Usually,
it's still a dog, which is better than most things.
Usually, he is in the studio with us, so we miss him, dear. I miss him. Anyway, the point is, I obviously have an Instagram for my dog, mostly just so not my feed is not totally photos of him, but I can still share every photo of him. But his Instagram feed is my refuge, for sure, because it's the only accounts that I follow on that are other dogs and Rihanna. Fantastic combination.
Like, it's like all other dogs and Rihanna. We also have an Instagram account for our cats at Lily and Corky Show. Oh,
at putty_the_pup if we're promoting it.
And you know, and it's true. It's like there are just all other animals or pets. And then you just like, sometimes also like, you know, Instagram makes people depressed. Like Ingrid Goes West is a film that like, you know, really explores the dark feelings that are, you know, stoked by that particular platform. And if you just like look at everybody else's cats or dogs and or all of their pets, it's just like, oh, there's cleft lipped Cleo, Calico from New York. And then you can like go to bed at peace. So, you know, we've been talking a lot about visual culture, but, you know, a lot of people turn to music when they're like down and depressed. And in fact, there have been so many studies about like how crucial like a kind of musical life is, or contact with music is, to inspiring happiness and to, you know, like helping alleviate depression. So I'm wondering, what is a song that when you hear it, you can't help but have your spirits lifted, even if you're having a really shitty time, you've fallen in the Whole Foods parking lot, Lisa Kudrow has iced you at Bloomingdale's, but this song comes on, what is it?
This one is maybe a little niche, but the song All Night by Icona Pop. It's such like a dance jam. And the music video for it is like an underrated masterpiece. Because it's all about, like, Icona Pop are these two, like, I'm pretty sure they're Swedish singers. They're the original ABBA. They were ABBA before ABBA, even though they are, like, 12 years old.
I was like, what?
There's revisionist history happening here.
But the music video for All Night is all about, like, ballroom culture.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
This pre-pose on FX. This is pre-Drag Race. Maybe not pre-Drag Race, but I just love the music video. It's just like a dance jam. It's all about staying out all night and having fun.
Oh,
which is like honestly not my vibe, but like I like listening to it
you
in
like
the shower.
You like the fantasy of that. Yeah, right, you like to like live in that world in your mind in your shower.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. About you? So I have two answers. One is just the album that I put on to make myself happy, and I did recently tweet about this because it's Hotter Than July. It's a Stevie Wonder album kind of an underrated Stevie Wonder album, and it is. I love it so much. There are so many transitions within the songs that like they just make me want to dance and also just like do. Yeah, I just love it so much. And that album really does make me happy, especially, well, now it's August, but I listened to it in July like a
and it was
silly person. Yeah, and it was great. But the song that I put on to like pump myself up when I'm not feeling great is the remix of another song that Nicki Minaj remixed, and it's I'm a Boss Ass Bitch. And most of the song is just I'm a boss ass bitch, 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 bitch.
I'm a boss ass bitch, 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 bitch. I'm a boss ass bitch, 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 bitch.
And it's just like, it's such a like pump up, like, gross. I have listened to it like on my way to interviews.
That's like your Jack Donaghy in the Mirror.
Exactly.
Song.
Yes.
Like, you're just like, you've got Donaghy. You're bald. Margaret.
Well, I had thought of suddenly this is like not on brand for me in many, many ways, but like there is this Flo Rida song
oh,
with Sia from 2012, Wild One. You guys remember this song?
Yeah.
There was just something about that song that summer that every time I heard it, I just was like a fly on shit with it, where I was just like, I love this song. And I just would turn it up. I'd play it at home. Like, it just had this real spark for me. And then I watched the video one time and I was like, you know what? When you hear a song like that, and like at that time, like Flo Rida, that was kind of like one of his breakout hits. He wasn't like as well known as he is now. And I was sort of like, who is he? I want to watch this video. And it's just like him being like kind of dumb and muscular, like driving around in a Jeep with like babes on his arms. And it's just like the most like low rent video ever in the world. And I was like kind of disappointed and like, well, okay, fine, but I still like the song a lot.
Yeah. That's a fun one.
Yeah, it's fun. It's just like, it's a summer jam.
I mean, that's the thing is like, we've been talking, we won't get into that now, but like, you know, we've been talking about like how we feel bereft of a jam that's done that for us this summer so far. Hmm. But, you know, I mean, I suppose, I don't know if it was a summer jam, but it was a jam from 1997 and it's super infectious and it's an obvious choice. But like the thing that always lifts my spirits and just gets me like tapping my toes and doing all the background little second Hanson brother parts is Hanson's Mmmbop. Which is just the sunshiniest song ever. I imagine it's probably some other person's version of like hell.
Yeah.
But for me, like it's kind of it represents to me like a carefree moment when I was like in grad school and like just kind of miserable all the time. But like that song would come on and I'd just be like, oh, there is still joy and happiness in the world and pop culture can bring it to you in such a crystallized form.
Well, that makes me think of some reason, like, how happy I get every time I hear the Bangles walk like an Egyptian.
Yeah.
It just gives me, like, happy, warm memories of childhood.
Yeah.
I think sometimes that's all it takes is, like, just to bring you back to the fifth, sixth grade realm.
I mean, Nelly's Ride With Me is another good one. Mm-hmm. I think in the vein of your Flo Rida.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's all...
Where you're like, who am I? But I am this person who likes this song.
And the other song that I shared as a gem recently was, of course, Swing Out Sisters Break. Out, which is just so joyful. But pretty much everything I'm naming you can hear on a casino floor in Las Vegas, which tells you that like, they really do their research. And it's like, what will put you in a good mood and feel like you have some money to spend? And I think those are some of the gems. So, Margaret, you mentioned earlier that you got rid of Love and Hip Hop in a kind of this... In the kind of Marie Kondo decluttering your pop culture life way, is there something that any of you would expel from the world if you were decluttering your life to only keep the pop culture possessions that spark joy? What do you think you'd kick out of your diet?
Oh, man.
I mean, lately it's been any comedy special that it features a straight white man. I'm just like, you know what? There's about 1,000 Netflix specials. I can pick and choose which ones will, tickle my fancy.
Yeah.
Man, I really don't know if I have an answer for this. I think I do a pretty good job of not consuming things television-wise that make me upset. I think. Although, you know what? I'll say The Handmaid's Tale. I watched the first season.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good
one. I'm not going to watch the second. It's not worth the emotional baggage that I would
endure.
I'm so
glad you brought that up. Because I was like, I loved the first season on a lot of levels, although I had issues with it, and I had issues a lot with the song selection.
Yeah, I did find it weirdly inspirational. I didn't watch it when it was on. I watched it later, and it did feel kind of like, I was like, she's going to, but I just don't care about where it's going because I know it's just going to be brutal, and I don't want to put myself through that.
Well, I keep hearing that it's just getting darker and darker and darker, and almost to the point that it's like just alienating people, even like the hardcore fans. So yeah, I just, I know, I haven't gone back to it either.
I can confirm that that is true.
Yeah.
I watched it till the end. Yeah. And they don't do enough to bring it, but like it's not enough of a roller coaster. It's just like a free fall.
A just plunge.
And there's a lot of anger that comes up with the last scene in this last season of The Handmaid's Tale.
Interesting.
And I mean, the thing that I would, it's probably an unpopular choice, but I just can't watch the Real Housewives franchise anymore. I think that I was just
anymore,
like, sort of, I used to take tremendous pleasure in just binging the Real Housewives, especially anytime I was flying a Virgin America plane and they had Bravo on the plane. And then now I just like, for some reason, I don't know what it is. I guess I can't take that level of meanness to each other. Even though I watch, you know, like shows where people are constantly maiming each other, like actually, you know, so.
But they're just so.
Which shows are
so
those?
Yeah.
Well, Game of Thrones.
Oh, okay.
But it's still like fiction.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Not ostensibly real, but I mean, there's so many of them now that I also feel like in a way they've diluted their brand. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
When you have Real Housewives of
Potomac.
Maryland or wherever the fuck it is. Yeah, like.
What I'm hearing is that you think the Real Housewives should go full Game of Thrones. Like, just give them all.
Exactly.
Give them swords.
Yes. I think it's time to do. I think it's time.
Like, they should only have, like, Dungeons and Dragons, like, weapons, and, like, that's how they have to get out.
Well, on that note, I think that is a very joyous picture for us to end on. And actually, you know what? Let's not stop with the picture of violence. But let me just ask you one last question. Instead of an angel on your shoulder giving you advice, you could have a celebrity or public figure of your choice on your shoulder who would be your joy or inspiration.
Oh, gosh.
You know, we can think there's some obvious choices. There's Mr. Rogers. There's Oprah, obviously. You know, we've seen Oprah completely, like, incorporated into plot lines of different shows in that way. But who would you want on your shoulder?
I mean, my mind immediately goes to my two favorites, which are Beyonce, obviously. But Harry Styles is my one true man crush slash my wife.
He seems like he'd be positive.
He has a very, he does have a relentlessly positive vibe that I think would counteract my pessimism.
Mm-hmm.
Barry and I also went and saw him in concert recently, and his motto now is treat people with kindness.
It's like on cookies.
And it is plastered everywhere. Yeah, it's baked onto things. And so,
you can get baked eating those cookies.
Yeah.
Oh, I did. And so I think he would be a positive vibe, but it would make me sad to have a tiny Harry Styles.
He'd want full size.
Right. He can be on my shoulder, but he has to be full size.
Harry also?
For me, no, not Harry, although I do love that show is extremely joyful, just absolute joy.
If she said Harry Styles, I would stab her with a sword.
And then we would end on violence, which I was trying to avoid. But go ahead, Barry.
Mine is not violent. I think mine, because like my anxieties are all of the things that it's like I'm constantly freaking out about the impressions I'm making and the conversations I'm having and just constantly questioning myself. And I think I would need like a Cardi B on my shoulder to like yell in an encouraging, loving way of being like, don't fucking listen to those people. Like, stop. Don't listen to yourself. Listen to me right now. And just, like, take control of that for me. And it'd be really nice and happy.
I think you'd have a good time.
I think so, too.
Mm-hmm. Magpops.
This is a little bit of a different answer because she's not a celebrity. But do you guys know who Mari Andrew is? She's this illustrator on Instagram. She has a lot of 900,000 followers or something like that. But she's kind of, you've seen things of her shared for sure. She has like a very like gentle, therapeutic, like positive spin on like any kind of sufferings. Like anything that you, like she'll create these beautiful like little illustrations of like, you know, the way that you might feel after a bad breakup or, you know, I'm just going to open up one and look at it. Like, she has this really funny one that she just published recently called Friends in Their 30s Instagram Bingo. And it's all of these things that you'll see on your friend's Instagram, like uncomfortably intimate photo of romantic partner or date, work hard, play hard cocktail, flowers purchased in the name of self-care, baby with food on its face. Like, she's just kind of like a documenter of what's going on in a really like honest, gentle way. And I feel like she's one of those people that like on Instagram I turn to as just like a way to like think about life, you know, like to make a positive spin on things.
So she already kind of exists on your shoulder, at least
in a way,
in front of you.
Yeah.
Mine would be Tracee Ellis Ross.
Oh, yeah. Such a good
she
choice.
She is so affirmative and warm and smart. And actually, her social media is another happy place that I like to go and
100%.
See kind of at once sort of political righteousness in a good way and also just pure joy and goofiness.
And great. Like historical archives of her life.
Yeah.
Because like, her life is historical.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Amazing.
No, it's really wonderful. And so, yeah. So, Tracee, you know, I know we chatted for Bullseye, which should be coming out in the middle of the month. Hit me up and let's hang out.
Okay. It's going to happen.
So, you've been listening to Pop Rocket. We'll be right back after this.
Hi, I'm Allie Gertz.
And I'm Julia Prescott, and we're
Everything's Coming Up Simpsons.
We are a Simpsons podcast on the Maximum Fun Network, and we've got some exciting news.
Ooh, tell me.
We are going to be doing some live podcast shows in some of our favorite cities. We're so excited, and we want to let you guys know out there in the Max Fun universe that we are coming to you.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. On Saturday, September 15th, we will be at the North Door in Austin, Texas.
Yeehaw.
On Saturday, December 1st, we will be at the Alamo Draft House, Sloan's Lake in Denver, Colorado.
There's no basement in the Alamo.
We'll find out. Friday, December 7th, we are going to be at the Vera Project in Seattle, Washington.
Oh, God. Nirvana.
Yes.
Okay.
And Saturday, December 8th, we will be at Mississippi Studios in Portland, Oregon.
Hey, Matt Groening lives there.
Yes.
Or once lived there.
He still lives there in our hearts. So make sure that you mark your calendars for those dates, and we will be posting the ticketing links on our Twitter. That is at SimpsonsPod, and we will smell you later.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Karen Tongson. With me in the studio are
Margaret Wappler,
Barry Finkel,
Matt Belisai.
So before we proceed with that section that you know about, our jams, we have a couple of important announcements from our dear Magwops.
So, guys, Summer Book Club, it is literally around the corner. So if you haven't gotten Crazy Rich Asians yet, this is pretty much your last chance to get the book, inhale it, and be on time for our discussion on August 17th on the book by Kevin Kwan. I know some people in this room have been blazing through
I just got the third book out of three.
Yeah,
I just started the third book. So by the time we talk about Crazy Rich Asians, the book next week, I'll have read the whole trilogy and be really excited, and I'll try not to spoil everything.
Oh my God, nice work. I am neck deep in Crazy Rich Asians now, and I think I'm going to get to the second one over the weekend. This is my goal. So look out for that show on August 17th. And then also Summer Jams.
I'm sure you've been wondering what's been going on because, you know, summer's almost over.
Yeah.
But, you know,
We like to do it late because we like to assess the whole beast of the summer and see what ruled the streets. And with Guy being a goddess out there touring, we needed to wait for him to get back to report back to us about all of the things he might discover about summer jams out there on the road.
On the road, yeah. What's playing out there in Peoria?
Yeah, what are the people responding to? So anyway, we're going to talk about that shortly after Labor Day. It'll be out September 7th.
Yep. So yeah, stay tuned, Summer Jams, and cram the rest of Crazy Rich Asians this weekend before next week's show. Okay. So you know that every week on Pop Rocket, we ask our panel, what's your current jam? Barry, what's your current jam?
So on the Beyonce theme, I had never really been much of a listener to concerts. Not just live Beyonce's concerts, just like live recordings of concerts. But I listened to I Am World Tour and had no idea that she covered You Oughta Know by Alanis Morissette.
Oh, wow.
Oh, interesting.
Uh-huh. It's a medley of If I Were a Boy and You Oughta Know. And it came on. I was just walking around West Hollywood because I had nothing to do. And it came on and I just like stopped. I was like, I can't believe this is happening. So that's my jam.
I want you to know that I'm happy for you, and I want nothing but the best for you both. Another version of me, Mr. Duplicity.
Love it. Matt was ashamed that I did not know that, and I'm sorry. I'm not the Beyonceologist. You are.
Yeah. True.
Well, speaking of Beyonceologist, Matt, what's your jam this week?
Oh, now I'm like ashamed that it's not a Beyonce song, but it's always a Beyonce song in my heart. My jam, as it is every week, is Mamma Mia. Not only because Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again came out recently, but because I hadn't seen Mamma Mia until recently. And even though, like, as a gay, it is instilled in...
So you hadn't seen the original film.
Right.
Or the theatrical production.
Right. Until recently.
Wow.
Although I knew, like, instinctually every lyric. I finally watched the movie,
because
and it's terrible. It's terrible. It's a terrible movie, even though it was nominated for a Golden Globe. And Meryl Streep was nominated for a Golden Globe. But I just love it so much. Just the entirety of Mamma Mia, the song.
Yeah, isn't that just supposed to bring joy? That's what everyone's saying about
right.
the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that, like, you can't... It's bad, but you can't not like it.
Right. Unless you have a heart of stone. Right.
So here we go again.
Mamma Mia. Here I go again, my, my, how can I resist ya? Mamma Mia, does it show again, my, my, just how much I missed ya?
It's like you can't stop once you start listening to it. It's like infectious. Even the Meryl Streep version, which I was like a little bit surprised. You know,
like, I think you just go deep into ABBA now and just like never come back.
I mean, you know, I have to say that one of the ABBA songs that actually gives me joy is a slight outlier. It's Super Trooper. Like, there's something about like that percussive little part of it that's like awesome. Anyway. Magwells, what do you have for us this week?
Well, this is a different kind of joy, but from Winter's Wedding, actually.
Oh.
This is the song that she played when she was walking down the aisle, and it was a beautiful choice. It was really unique and unusual, and it really set the tone, and it caught my ear instantly, and I was like made a mental note. I gotta ask Winter what this song is. And then, of course, today, being like the good social media person that she is, she just like put her whole playlist for all of her wedding stuff like up on Facebook.
Yeah.
So this is a song from James Blake from his 2016 album, The Color in Anything, and this is called Choose Me.
I looked into myself like a case with you. You don't weigh me down like you think you do.
It's so beautiful, isn't it? It just almost feels like church on a certain level.
I love James Blake.
It's gorgeous.
And to hear that like kind of wafting through the trees and like the kind of bamboo rustling behind our beautiful bride Winter.
I know. It's really touching.
It's really, really sweet.
Do you guys watch The Good Place?
Yeah. I have watched The Good Place, yeah.
Jamila Jamil, who plays Tahani.
Oh, yeah.
Long-term partner of James Blake.
Oh, really?
Fun fact.
I did not know.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
A true Tahani move, but also it's just like a couple I love.
Yeah,
to
that's a
watch.
Good couple that part.
Is, yeah.
Oh, now I have to find their couple Instagram.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, Instagram follow.
Okay, so in the spirit of approaching our Summer Jam final like showdown here, I think that this song is coming in hard in the ubiquity category here at the end of the summer. It's asserting its presence in our summer jam stakes. And I really can't believe that this is the second Maroon 5 song that I've chosen for my jam the same calendar year. I think, you know, like my unconscious is speaking. Who knows? This is Girls Like You featuring Cardi B. I need a girl like you. I spend last night on the last flight to you. We took a whole day up trying to get way up. Ooh. So, you know what I have to say is that these. yeah, Cardi, come on up here. Bring Cardi in. Actually, we can't stop
she's
there.
She's here
no,
on my
can't.
Shoulder.
We have to have like, at least a taste of Cardi. Yeah, yeah, only exactly. To like encourage Barry.
So let's get into it. So we got that little bit going on, but this is really kind of the killer part of the song. Why is the best food always forbidden? I'm coming to you now doing 20 over the limit. The red light, stop. I don't play when it comes to my heart. Let's get it though. I don't really want a white horse in a carriage. I'm thinking more white horses. All right.
She's so cute.
I mean, it's just amazing. So I think that, you know, Cardi B, when we get to our Summer Jams episodes, I think, like, we're going to see how important Cardi B has been to this entire summer.
Yeah.
But also in relation to this song, one reason that I think it qualifies as a summer jam, at least not just because of its release date and its ubiquity, but also for its spirit, is that it's, you know, it's like kind of like end of summer romance thing going on there.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's like, just think about it as summer loving for the modern age. Summer loving for Greece.
Yeah.
And, you know, only with Adam Levine and Cardi B. So
would watch that Grease remake.
Totally
would watch
it. Right? You've been listening to Pop Rocket, hosted by me, Karen Tonkin, with Margaret Wappler, and our special guests, Matt Bellassai and Barry Finkel. Matt and Barry, tell us where to find you online in the world.
You can find me at Matt Bellassai on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and our podcast is Unhappy Hour.
Yeah, it comes out on Tuesdays. If you want to follow me, I'm at Finkelberry Pie. If you want to follow my dog, which is way more fun, it's at putty_the_pup, PUDDY. Well,
thank you for coming. I'm going to be looking your pup up.
Please do. Very cute.
It's such a pleasure to have you here for our Happy Hour with the Unhappy Hour crew. Our theme music is Party Booby Trap by Ozzy Mizo. Thanks to him for letting us use it. Thanks to everyone for the 5-star reviews on iTunes. If you haven't already, please review us. This week, we'd like to thank RY12345678910.
That's not real.
That's a Russian bot.
Yes, so thank you, Russian bot, for this wonderful review, which says... Wow, where do I start? I've been a Pop Rocket fanboy for 2 years now, and I'm actually mad that I'm just now writing a review. The show's incredible, hilarious, insightful, genuine, and full of intellectual conversations about pop culture. It's changed my perspective on a lot of topics. Guy is absolutely brilliant and hilarious. Karen always provides a thoughtful and scholarly perspective that brings up such interesting questions. I'm glad that it's scholarly. Margaret has such an interesting way of talking about narratives and characters and winter. Well, she's my stream of consciousness brought to life. Missing you, boo. She'll be back soon, guys. So, you know, Margaret, that was like the one review that we got this week. How are you feeling?
Well,
are
that was a really kind review.
Setting on?
Yeah, but I feel a bit fatigued. I feel fatigued. We have a running joke that if I don't get enough reviews, I may die.
Take Margaret's words seriously, people, okay?
You can rate our show, too. Great idea.
Yeah.
It's 5 stars for Unhappy Hour.
Just start threatening your health and life. And,
right.
And guys, the reviews will pour in.
If you don't review our show, I'll stab Barry with a sword.
There you go. That's what I'm talking about.
And then you'll have your own Real Housewives show on Bravo anytime soon. Get in touch with us. Get in touch with us on Twitter. We're at Pop Rocket, or join our Facebook group and join the discussion. You can also follow us at Pop Rocket Podcast on Instagram. We're a production of MaximumFun.org. The show is edited by Shayna Deloria, and our senior producer is a Leo, and her birthday is tomorrow, Laura Swisher.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.